You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Something up tempo here. It's been a couple of heavy weeks in Memphis, and so we're lightening the mood tonight. And do you know what puts me in a good mood, Keith Alexander?
No vegetables.
I'll tell you what puts me in a good mood. What puts me in a good mood is having three great guests, and that what is what we've got tonight. Not just three great guests, but as your humble servant, I would do a great guest a disservice to match them or pair them with a topic that's not necessarily in their wheelhouse. Part of being a good host is bringing on guests and pairing a topic of conversation or a line of questioning that's fitted to their particular strengths. And I think we've got that tonight. What we've got tonight is an explosive night of talk radio. Three dynamite guests coming back to the program and kicking things off here in just a few minutes will be author and advocate Jason Kuna. And Jason will be back with us, Mr. No White Guilt himself. He's going to be talking about how language shapes our reality, our politics, and our culture. But more than that, Jason's group, you know, he has a big following and he has people who are willing to get out and go to public events and carry the message that he...
Hit the streets.
Yes, and they are asking now of political candidates, what will you do for white people? What is your position on anti-whiteism and white erasure? And they asked this of the Republican nominee for governor in Massachusetts a few days ago. How did that go? We're going to play the clip and talk to Jason about it. That's coming up in the first hour. I guarantee you're not going to want to miss what he has to say. And then in the second hour, political activist and commentator Warren Balog will be back, and he's going to help us unpack. Folks, we've been doing this a long time. You know that. We've been on the air a lot of years. The single most egregiously flagrant news headline that I've ever seen. Now, that... Think of what that's saying. Think of what I'm saying there to put it in that term. That's what I think it is. And what is it? What are we going to be talking about? Yeah, wow. That's coming up in the second hour. Warren Balog will have us attack that article because it concerns him and the work of Mike Enoch and the National Justice Party. We'll get into that. Also going to talk about Ron DeSantis and Governor Abbott in Texas and the Martha's Vineyard stunt. That's funny. So we'll talk about all that with Warren in the second hour. And then Henrik Palmgren from Red Ice is scheduled to be back in the third hour. And we have planned to talk to him about the so-called, what are they calling them, far-right neo-Nazi party that has come to power in Sweden. How much power have they come to? Is it fool's gold? Is it the real deal? Well, Henrik is a native Swede, a native Viking, and so that's what we've got to talk to him about. That's what we've got coming up for you tonight. Jason Kuna, Warren Balog, Henrik Palmgren, 1, 2, 3 hours, 1, 2, and 3. So, Keith, do you think you can handle that?
I'm going to be hanging on by my fingernails. You know, this is going to be fun.
It's going to be a fun show tonight. I wanted to give you just a minute, my friend, to comment. We actually got to the studio an hour early tonight, which is a little bit earlier than usual. Normally, we go out to eat before the show. We didn't do that tonight. We came straight to work, had some work to do. And we were talking about last week's guest, Harry Cooper, and I said, you know, we're going to get Harry back in the regular rotation, and the next time we have Harry on, sometime later this fall, we'll have him back for another talk. You said you wanted to open the conversation. You weren't with us for that hour last week. You contributed to the show, but you missed the guest interview. How would you want to open up a conversation with Harry Cooper of Shark Hunters when he comes back? And what did you think about that interview, first of all?
I thought it was a great interview. I thought he was a wonderful, convivial, gregarious individual. And that's exactly what we need. And basically what he's done is he's reached out with an olive branch to German World War II veterans. And you can tell that they are so appreciative of no longer being the whipping boy every time that someone comes to talk to them about World War II. Somebody that appreciates the German military, the German soldiers and sailors that fought in World War II. They were honorable men. They were doing what all young men did, which was answered the call of their country. And the fact that he is bringing these people together, mending fences, and for the larger pro-white movement, nothing could be better. That's what we've got to do. We've got to look at all other white people as our brothers. And we need them to think about, you know, all these... Some people, you know, go back to these old ideas about Slavs being some type of inferior breed of whites. They're not. Not at all. They're great. They're wonderful. I tell you what, I'll take Slavic immigrants from Ukraine or Russia any day over the type that we normally get here in America. And this is something that, we've got to show some white solidarity. And that Harry does it. Without fanfare, that's what he's doing. He is reaching out to our Nordic brothers in Germany, and more power to him. My hat's off to him.
And since our conversation with Harry last week on the program, he has since announced the dates of his next tour of Germany, where you'll have a chance to go and visit some of these sites that are of historic importance to the Second World War and meet with some of these German veterans, as we talked about last week. And the next tour is going to be coming up in the fall of next year, so about a year from now. But the dates have been announced, and they have been announced since last week's show. When we get Harry back on, we'll go through all of that and let Keith talk to him, and that'll be fun. Now, one more thing before we get to those aforementioned guests over the course of the next 3 hours. Folks, I just looked at the calendar, and it is Saturday evening, September the 24th. This is the last Saturday of the month. Which means this is the last chance we'll have to talk to you before our third quarter fundraising drive comes to a close. When we come back with you next week, it will be the first Saturday in October, and our fundraising appeal, the incentive gift, and that appeal ends on the 30th, so next Friday. Folks, this show is free for you to listen to. We don't put anything behind a paywall, not that people who do, that there's anything wrong with that. But we don't do that. We've never done that. The archives are available free of charge. Obviously, you can tune in and catch us live every Saturday night. It is free for you to listen to, but it is not free for us to produce. There are a great number of expenses that we have every month to continue to operate at a high level and to be out there to the extent that we are, which I think is at the tip of the spear with regards to pro-white broadcast media. Listenership has never been larger. We see the numbers, but our donor base is not necessarily growing in an equivalent manner. Folks, if you enjoy our work, please support us. We've got these wonderful DVDs, Sam Dixon and Kevin MacDonald speeches. I'm handing one to Keith right now. He's going to fire it up when he gets home. But do support us. You've got a week left to do it, and the mailing address is at the website. We'll be right back.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Decades after Jimmy Carter, Joe Biden picked up where he left off. With America surrendering to terrorists, Biden's foolish spending is causing inflation, which means more pain at the pump, higher prices on groceries, devaluing your retirement savings when you need it most. Once was a mistake. Twice is a disaster. America needs strong leaders, not weak ones. Save America JFC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
I think that my family has always had a big influence on me for not smoking because since I was little, I was taught that smoking was wrong.
Recent studies indicate that smoking among teens often leads to the use of alcohol and other drugs.
I think having faith in God is a big part in it because the way I was raised has helped to avoid smoking.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
How do you know your child loves you?
When he calls and he says, Dad, why don't we go fishing? Just very simple, but it really counts.
They make a song up and they come into our bedroom and say, we made a song and will you listen to it?
Our next oldest daughter came with tears in her eyes. She said, Daddy, I just thank you for coming home every night when we were growing up.
My son does the nicest things. When he's playing outside, he'll come in and just give me a hug and run right back outside.
My daughter goes to the same high school that I'm the registrar at, and I'll go into my office after the bell has rung, and there's a note on my desk. And it'll usually say, Mom, I love you. I'm thinking about
you. And I think of my boy that we finally got him through graduation. And he came up to me and said, I made it. Thanks.
Family, isn't it about time?
That's all he said. And that meant everything to me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
And we're back now with the first of the aforementioned three outstanding guests that we have coming your way this evening. And the first is Jason Kuna. Jason is a prolific spokesman for our cause. He is an author of several titles that we have featured on this program, one of which we made a fundraising incentive not too long ago. He is an advocate for our people par excellence. And we'd like to welcome him back. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
I am magnificent. Can you hear me okay, James?
I hear you fine.
All right, brother. Yeah, I'm doing wonderful. It's another beautiful day in the once great state of Virginia, and it is always great to be with you and this wonderful community. I love them all, and ready to get underway.
Well, here we go. Let's get underway, and it's always great to have you back. Pointed toward you. Okay, so you've got pinned at the top of your Twitter handle, Jason, a tweet from the World Jewish Congress, and they had written that language shapes our reality. Now, this is something that you have focused a lot of attention to, and you have basically, in large part, put into the public's consciousness the terms anti-whitism, white erasure, among others. But let's talk a little bit about how language shapes our reality, politics, and culture, and your work in bettering our people through this prism.
Yeah, this has been something that we, as an entire white sympathetic sphere, have really overlooked, and largely overlooked. The importance to the concepts we use, it cannot be overstated, because it is with words that we think. We can have other things go through us, through our mind. They're called emotions. You're not thinking when you're experiencing emotions. I mean, a koala bear can feel comfortable as it sits in its eucalyptus tree, just like you might feel comfortable or you might feel good about a particular situation. But that's not thinking. It's the concepts with which we think that we are either able to defend ourselves or not defend ourselves. And so one of the biggest problems for us has been that we simply do not have the concepts with which we can properly defend ourselves against the psychological warfare that's waged against us. Now, psychological warfare is anti-whiteism, and we have to have a psychological defense for it. What happens all too often is our victimizers, quite intelligently, provide us with concepts that undermine our self-defense. For example, no white person was going around saying whiteness and that we produced whiteness and that we were whiteness. It just, for one reason, it sounds ugly. But then when these anti-white thinkers and politicians and media pundits and the rest started using at university and elsewhere this deleterious concept, whiteness, suddenly people all across the white sympathetic sphere were talking about how we have to defend whiteness and come to discover, of course, that whiteness, as created and defined, coined, neoterized by our victimizers, means white people. It means that white people don't exist. And it means that white is oppression. And so they can make the argument then, and they do, that you have to get rid of your whiteness. And of course, this, by extension, means to get rid of white people, to white erase white people, to white erase what we project into our environment, which is who and what we are instinctually. So, for example, with that particular pinned comment, back in 94, when I started using anti-white and anti-whiteism, the World Jewish Congress, Jews all around the world, they were fine with anti-Semitism. I went with anti-whiteism, not because they were doing that or in contradiction, but because that sums up the superset of ideology that we are victimized by. Well, I was confronted with, do I put a hyphen or do I leave it anti-whiteism as a single concept?
And Jason, if I could interrupt very quickly, why were the Jews so excited when they put into the new style guide for so-called journalists that anti-Semitism would not be hyphenated anymore? I couldn't quite understand that. I mean, why would it matter? Why does it matter to them?
This is because the thing that's – they are focused on the power of words. Words are essentially like spells over the human mind. And so the same thing that I did back in 94, they did many years later, the World Jewish Congress, they looked at many years later, and just recently, the New York Times officially changed, per their request, they're taking the hyphen out of the word anti-Semitism. The reason for that, the reason why I decided not to use a hyphen, was because when you don't have a hyphen, you have a single concept rather than the opposite of a concept. This is important when it comes to communicating to the average person. It's important when it comes to having a concept that operates in your subconscious mind and therefore provides a host of notions and feelings that you don't have to call upon consciously to understand in the moment. It's acting and reacting. So no hyphen is infinitely more powerful than with a hyphen. And so many years later, I'd like to joke that we in our community, all those years ago, when I decided not to use the hyphen on anti-whiteism, we were finally caught up to by the World Jewish Congress and the rest. Many 20 years more plus later, when they decided to get rid of the hyphen and anti-Semitism to make that word or that concept more powerful, more whole, more singular, almost amenable, if I could anthropomorphize it, to the definition that they want to provide it in any given context. So it's extremely powerful and empowering to have tools at your disposal, essentially wands that are not made by your victimizer. And we like to say in the Go Free Method that you never take the names of their giving, and you never give them the names of their taking. So whatever they call themselves, never call them that. And whatever names they give you.
Jason, this is Keith. Let me just say this. Yeah. I think they've done us a great favor by focusing on whiteness. Because whiteness, just without any context, has a very positive connotation to most people. You know, white is good. White is pure. Black is the opposite of that, and they're on the side of blackness. Can we capitalize on that?
Talking about phenomenon, aesthetically speaking,
or in terms of just
wordplay?
Well, no, no, because they, since they coined this concept and they've been writing about it for a great many years, it's been literally thousands and thousands and, I mean, hundreds of thousands of theses now, and professors speaking about the whole professoriate using it, and it reaching from academia into media and into the commentariat. This now has, whiteness now has a very definitive set of ideas associated with it. And so they can call at any moment upon one of their, quote, experts to come up and say exactly what whiteness is. So the big danger is, if, for example, if we were to take, say, the white hat idea, the good guy, and if they had coined the white hat, and therefore the average person, and that's who we're trying to speak to, the average brother or sister out there, believed that they held the truth of the definition, the real meaning of this definition over white hat, then when pundits would bring on one of these so-called experts and say, okay, well, Keith, Jason, and James are all calling themselves white hat. Here's what white hat really means. That's different than...
well, you know, that there's a big history of that.
That's interesting.
Though, Jason, there's a big history of your enemies naming you. For example, the Confederates didn't start calling themselves rebels. That's what the Union people called us. The Baptists were not called Baptists. They didn't name themselves Baptists. That's what their enemies called them, rebaptized.
All right, I actually want to follow up with Jason about this. We're going to get to the – well, this is all important. This is all very important. I don't want to say the main event is what they're doing with regards to taking these terms and asking politicians to let their intentions be known. But we'll get to that, too. Always fascinating talking with Jason. We'll be back with him, and he'll be back with us right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Violence between Iranian security forces and Iranian protesters angry over the death of a 22-year-old woman in police custody has resulted in at least 9 people being killed since the violence erupted over the weekend. Masha Amini was arrested and ultimately died because of a headscarf. President Biden declared the United Nations on Wednesday that Russia has shamelessly violated the core tenets of the international body with its war in Ukraine. He then asked nations around the globe to stand firm in backing the Ukrainian resistance. Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, agreed to be questioned by the mostly partisan January 6 committee. On Wednesday, the Fed raised the interest rates for the fifth time this year by another 0.75 percentage point. Powell also warned America the red-hot inflation will be with us for years.
FOMC participants have marked down their projections for economic activity, with the median projection for real GDP growth standing at just 0.2% this year and 1.2% next year.
The Australian Broadcasting Corporation is reporting 230 whales were found washed up on Tasmania's west coast early Wednesday, and only 35 remained alive as waves took their toll on the animals. This is the second mass whale stranding in 2 days. President Biden announced a major disaster declaration for Puerto Rico and ordered federal aid to assist with recovery efforts in areas affected by deadly Hurricane Fiona. At this hour, 1,033,000 homes on the island are without power. NASA's Artemis 1 rocket passed a critical fueling test Wednesday, potentially keeping it on track for a planned September 27th liftoff to lunar orbit in the unmanned mission. For more information, visit us online at usaradio.com. USA Radio News.
This week on the Green Stock Journal, we're looking at public companies dedicated to environmentally friendly alternative energy sources. Blue Biofuels, trading under the symbol BIOF, has developed and patented a technology that can convert ordinary plant materials such as cane grass, sugarcane bagasse, and farm waste into sugars that are used to create ethanol and sustainable aviation fuels. Blue Biofuels does this in a CO2-neutral and environmentally friendly manner. With the Ukraine war leading to grain shortages and record-high corn prices, Blue Biofuels offers an alternative to corn-based ethanol by using plant-based waste. There are limitations in the amount of corn available for fuel, whereas there is sufficient plant-based feedstock suitable for the BIOF process to replace half the fossil fuels used in the U.S. Technologies like blue biofuels could be the answer that brings about a biofuels revolution, producing billions of gallons a year, making green energy production finally a reality. Do your research now on BIOF. For more on this story, visit greenstockjournal.com. This week on the Green Stock Journal.
Always great when our old friend Jason Kuna is back with us on TPC. He is a regular, making a handful of appearances every year, and for good reason. He is an idea man, and the work he is doing is quite unique. There is no one doing the work exactly like he does it. And we're talking about the power of language and how language and how being able to define your terms shapes perception and reality, etc. Jason, I want to move as quickly as we can, but you were touching on this at the end of the last segment. I'd like to revisit it or dig into it a little bit more. Talking about connotations, talking about terms and terminologies. They call us X. We call ourselves Y. Can you give us a few examples of how you've sort of cleaned up and improved some of the terms that we can use and why it's effective and how you're going out and popularizing it outside of the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. What's really important also, I think, when it comes to this sort of discussion is to understand who is this important for? Who's going to be the judge at any particular moment? And quite honestly, it begins with ourselves. We have to judge. We have to create for ourselves a story, a world in which we live our lives. Some people will object about, well, that doesn't suddenly communicate it to the world. Well, that's right. But we only have to communicate it to those with whom we interact. It has to be in a way, it has to be with concepts that they, even if they've never heard them before, even if they can't find the concept in the dictionary, they have to be able to know instantly what it means. It also has to have an aesthetic appeal. It has to sound normal. It has to sound right. You can sacrifice specificity, for example, for it to really achieve normalcy. So, for example, we in the Go Free method, which is a practice where we use concepts. Just like the ones that we've been talking about here, anti-white, anti-whiteism, we like to say that we serve white well-being. And that's the kind of thing that when you are in a conversation, and this has been proven, by the way, these are not just my opinions. The Go-Free method is a proven method over decades now, a proven and thousands of testimonials later, that when people have conversations with their friends, family, coworkers, and the like, and they talk about how they're serving white well-being, they object to anti-whiteism, how their interlocutors, all of these folks that they're having conversations with, are completely put into a different environment to be able to have a conversation with them. So it's important then to understand that we don't have to change societal, we don't have to change everybody's concepts that they use at once. We just have to use concepts so that the people we are talking with need to speak and understand those concepts in order to speak with us. So
we need a redoubt, in other words. Would you say that's true? We need to have a redoubt. Like, we're not ashamed to own being white, for example, and these are the terms we need to use to express our whiteness.
But right. We need to have a... And this is the thing. The anti-whites, and I very strongly encourage everyone to refer to them as anti-whites, their ideologies, anti-whiteism. There are hidden premises there that empower us and disempower them, disempower somebody who wants to villainy signal that they are anti-white. They have to work to manipulate us. They have to work to get us to lower our guard. So in order to do that, they have to be able to speak in our language. If we refuse to use the concepts with which it's easy to get us to lower our guard, if we refuse to talk about the periods in history and the rest, that enable them to victimize us because we have allowed that victimization to happen. Then to manipulate us, to propagandize us, they have to come to where we are. So you can effectively think about it as a foreign language. If we all suddenly spoke Martian tomorrow, if all white people spoke Martian, the anti-whites would not be able to continue speaking to us with English. It would do no good. They would have to learn Martian in order to propagandize and manipulate us.
So all right, Jason, for example, give us a couple of examples.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask. Pinpoint it. Give some examples, some illustrations, some verbal illustrations of what we're talking about. Their language versus the language you would like to see used when we respond.
Well, I would definitely, for one thing, they want to categorize us as right-wing, far-right, extremist, all of these sorts of things. One of the biggest errors is to be proud about the monikers they give us. So there are people out there that will argue that they're proudly extremist, they're proudly racist, and this sort of thing. That is one of the biggest errors you can make. Instead, you say, and I'll just tack on there, the reason why that's one of the biggest errors you can make is because there is a lifetime of learning in the people's heads around you. That's where it matters, not in a dictionary, not what we think versus what they think. What matters is our brothers and sisters' heads. That's the definitions and emotions that matter. There's a lifetime of learning that is attendant, that is drawn up by the subconscious mind when they hear extremist, when they hear radical right wing, when they hear racist, that immediately is drawn up and they place on you like a death shroud. So instead, you refuse to accept any of those monikers. You don't have to say never say, I'm not a racist. You instead say you are an activist for white well-being, for example. I simply care about the white race. You don't have to have, in fact, it's harmful and opens you up to attack when you have a particular moniker that they can later define, or others in a community of ours could give a definition to that you don't accept. You are a citizen of your country. You're a proud white man or woman. You serve white well-being. You are an activist against anti-whiteism. And all races of immutable characteristics, by the way, can and do combat anti-whiteism, and more are coming on all the time, adopting our stance of white well-being against anti-whiteism, because it's under the flag of anti-whiteism that everything is destroyed. So instead, you turn the conversation around on the people you're arguing with. You're only saying that because you practice anti-whiteism, you're an anti-white. Or if it's somebody you love, or it just sounds like it's anti-white. That's not your character. I don't know that about you. Are you sure that's the position you want to hold? And that's how we rephrase what we're talking about. We provide a host of meme curatives. And one of those meme curatives that we don't take the names of their giving and don't give the names of their taking, that's one of the most powerful meme curatives that you can use in your life. Another one that you can and this is more of just an argument that you can move forward with in various ways against any anti-white, no matter who it is, your mother-in-law or a professor trained for decades in anti-whiteism, is to say this. If your conclusion ends in something anti-white, if it ends in anti-whiteism, no matter what it is, no matter how many excuses you give, I reject it. The powerful element there is that the anti-white that you're speaking with will provide greater and greater reason to victimize you and our people. That's exactly where you want them to be. Because white people, again, the people who matter out there we're trying to convert, those people don't like victimization, generally speaking. And they immediately see the one who is the aggressor as the immoral actor in the conversation or in the scenario. And you then turn hearts by turning their minds this way. And we've had extreme success. One of the wonderful testimonials, types of testimonials that we get are from people who used to be very aggressive. They would take very ugly positions about World War II and events that happened in World War II and since World War II, and they would belabor these points and hit their family members over the head with these points, and they ruin their relationship with the family members, like mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters, when they adopt the Go Free method. Again, it's a practice, so it's concepts that you learn to use just in your normal conversations. Very simple. You learn more jargon for your trade. When you use these things, when these people have used these things, they have literally 180-degreed these relationships, so that friends and family who had rejected them and gone away from their concerns for the white race, Western civilization, suddenly turn around and they rebuild those relationships, and they start to give heed to those ideas that we're sharing.
That's what I want to talk about with one segment remaining in this appearance, this particular appearance by Jason Kuna. We're going to talk about the application of this in the real world, what Jason and his community are doing and how they're doing it and how it's affected. We'll
be As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only seven countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
All right, so we're talking with Jason Kuna about the power of language. Call these people what they are. Those who are opposed to our message are anti-whites. They seek white erasure. We are advocates of white well-being. This is some of the stuff that Jason has been teaching with his Go Free Method, and he is sort of the captain of the Going Free community, and we're going to be talking about how they take this to the streets and are popularizing it outside of the online sphere, although that's important as well, how you can go free from this anti-white system. Before we go back to Jason and talk about what the Going Free community did in a recent exchange with the Republican gubernatorial nominee in Massachusetts, Keith, a word.
Well, the left has been very successful in the culture war, and I've always been an advocate of the idea that if you want to see what works, look at what they've done. They, for example, came right out and attacked the negative connotations of the word black when they coined the phrase black is beautiful. Should we say white is wonderful? What do we have to do to basically turn that corner to making white into a positive rather than a negative in the public sphere?
A great question, Keith. And I guess just to tack on to that, I mean, we use another one of our concepts we use is the concept white positive. We refer to ourselves as white positive. We refer to white speech where white people are supposedly advocating for our people by saying just endless slews of negative things about non-white people. We refer to that as white negative speech. It evokes negative imagery. It makes us feel negative. Whereas when we're white positive, and when you tell family members and friends that you're white positive, there is a positive connotation to that. And it is about building a halo that works not only for those who are looking on, but also internally for us. Because when we are focused on the positive things, when we are focused on defending our people rather than pointing out the negatives of another group, we feel better. We harmonize with what it really means to be a white person, a Southerner. I know we all can speak to that. We feel better about who we are. It harmonizes with who we really are. So the question there is, who is our audience at any given moment? We are not going to be able, we set our sights on, we have to say, communicate to the world that white is wonderful. We're going to fail. We're going to end up causing folks who would otherwise have participated over the course of their lives in these efforts. We're going to end up causing them to feel morose, apathetic, and then eventually to fall out. We all have seen it countless times. So you want to give people goals that they can achieve, but also are the real goals of changing the dial in our society, which is their circles, the circles that they move in. And we need to provide them with concepts that they can use in those conversations that are concepts that selfishly empower each of us as an individual. Because when we come across something that has, you know, social cachet, we come across something that empowers us, we adopt it. So we call this a curative contagion effect. And we want our brothers and sisters, when they hear the concepts we use, to immediately say, ah, I will adopt that and use that in my conversations with those around me. That is how we can spread anything. We don't have the power, as you all know very well. We don't control the media. We're censored to hell and back by the anti-white. So we're not going to be able to make movies or TV shows to popularize the same way the anti-whites do. No, we need to take the power that they wield. And this is one of the biggest, the spells, if you will, the biggest pieces of magic in the Go Free Method, is that it takes the power that anti-whites wield with their billions and their control over everything, and it turns it into our service. It ends up working for us. By way of these concepts, not in the way that judo just merely takes a movement and then increases the movement. We literally take the strength of the anti-whites away from them and use it on them by using these concepts.
Jason, so talking about these concepts, and I want to ask you this as quickly as possible because I fear once we go into this next topic of conversation, we'll run out of time. Obviously, what we're talking about here, these concepts that you're discussing, is very involved, and it might take some listeners a little more than this appearance to really and fully get a grasp of what's going on here and what your work entails. So give us the contact information. If people want to learn more about Going Free and the White Wellbeing Community. Where can they find you, Jason?
NoWhiteGuilt.org. NoWhiteGuilt.org. There's a links tab at the bottom of the page. You click on links, and you can find all of the different platforms I'm on. YouTube. So YouTube.com/ NoWhiteGuilt is where you're going to be able to find, for certain, at least for now, all of the streams that I do, including the larger ones. Jason Goes Political on Tuesdays at 7, Going Free on Sundays at 5. That's a 4.5-hour long show. And we share all of these concepts, take questions, and teach right out of the Go Free booklet.
All right, so there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. NoWhiteGuilt.org on YouTube. It's you got the slash and the No White Guilt. And again, what Jason's doing with language, the way Jason presents our message. Now, we're all an overlapping collective here. All of the people on our program, all of the guests we have, they're doing various work, but we're all pulling in the same direction. But what Jason is doing is a little bit different, I think, than what a lot of our other friends are doing. And it's interesting, and it's worth a look. So NoWhiteGuilt.org. Now, Jason, I'm going to play this clip here that someone in your community sent to me, and it's a 30-second clip of white well-being advocates, to use your parlance, having a little conversation with the Republican nominee for governor in Massachusetts. We're going to play it for you. Some of it may be a little bit hard to hear. His answers may be a little bit hard to hear, but we'll translate, and I think you'll pick up most of it. You'll certainly get the gist, and then we'll have Jason break down, with only about 2 or 3 minutes remaining, why this is important and why we got to do more of this. Here we go.
Will you be speaking out against anti-whiteism as governor?
I'm not sure what that question is.
We are being victimized on the basis of our race. It's undeniable. I mean,
I think we all agree on equality. That's equality for everybody.
Including white people? What do you say? Mr. Deal, do you care about white people? The well-being of white people?
It's been nice talking to you. This line of questioning is a little inappropriate. Yeah.
Okay, so there you have the Republican nominee for governor of Massachusetts. Now, imagine a black candidate when asked, I mean, hell, imagine a white candidate when asked, what are you going to do for black people? What's your position on helping black people? Boy, they would have...
He's loaded for bear.
Yes, he would have it all ready to go. Basically, the big takeaway here, do you care about white people? His answer, this is inappropriate. What are you going to do for white people? I'm equality for all. Even white people, this is inappropriate. What did we hear there, Jason? And
that's
why
your
this...
base.
Yeah, I mean, I can guarantee you there's nobody that's not white that's going to vote for this guy in Massachusetts. So what did we hear there, Jason? Why is it significant?
Well, it's hugely significant because this is the concept making its way as we've been quietly working away, folks, and I want you all to be a part of this. We have teams of people. We have several teams. The outreach team is the biggest. We have individuals working working away by themselves. We have individuals working in collectives to strategically spread the lexicon that's overcoming the anti-whites. And this right here, with Jeff Deal, gubernatorial candidate, demonstrates the power of the concepts that we use, the lexicon that we promulgate. When No White Guilt Clip is the name of the young man, the champion, and it gets much bigger than what you see in just that clip there. When he went in to ask this candidate these questions, which, by the way, we articulated on my show, Jason Goes Political, what needs to happen to effectuate any kind of change where we can actually move the dial in the United States. We articulated this. This young champion, true man of the West, decided to immediately put it into action. He went to this location. He asked this candidate if he was going to stand up against anti-whiteism. The candidate, never having heard it before, likely, immediately you could see on his face that he knew what it was. Then he tried to do what's typical for a Republican or conservative content creator, and that is to play dumb. And so our champion, our young champion, kept at it, even though there was a young woman there that you couldn't hear, or that you could hear, you couldn't see, saying, oh, my God, how, you know, like, how dare you ask, that sort of thing. She's white, and Clips is what we call him for short. He kept at it. He asked that question, heard around the world, Mr. Deal, do you care about white people? That's when this guy ends up leaning over, slapping him hard on the shoulder and saying, this is inappropriate to even ask me this. After saying we care about equality, when he asked if he was going to care about white people a moment before then, the candidate actually has spit come out of his mouth. He is so stunned by these words, so stunned by the power of these concepts. He has spit come out of his mouth. He retreats. James, I got to tell you, our young champion, began the process of turning the woman that was there, that was stunned at the question, and had a crew of people circle him as he began to teach them with these concepts.
We're talking about. Jason, I wish we'd have spent an entire segment just on this. Everything we covered was important to lay this foundation leading up to this, but this is where you put the theory to practice. So your teams are going out there, and they're having this effect, and people are learning from them in a way that's really like a silver bullet. It's like a stake through the heart, through some of the mental and linguistic boundaries that our enemies have laid for us. And folks, you can learn more about this, again, as we mentioned, at nowhiteguilt.org. We want to have anybody that's producing good fruit for our people and doing honest work for our people to be on this program. That's why we have Jason so regularly. What he's doing is truly revolutionary in a way, I think. And Jason, it's always so good to talk to you. If you want to watch that clip, go to my Twitter handle at JamesEdwardsTPC. At the very top there, you can link over to Jason's Twitter handle as well. And we encourage you to do that. Follow him and keep in touch with him there too. But you can watch this, and it's got captioning. You can read the words as it's being spoken. You can see the look on this guy's face, this Republican nominee for governor.